Bonnie and Friends. Bonnie Simon. Jacaranda FM.
An older player. And within the space of a couple of minutes, I had made a very bad mistake. And that older player came back and patted me on the back and said, you know, in a very sarcastic tone, you know, hard luck, son, you know. So I think, you know, other than that, off the field, there were many moments. I think my most embarrassing moment was myself and my wife. Now, she's got a very mischievous side to her, and we were at a very posh do after the semi-final of the World Cup in Durban. I think it was Holland-Spain. So we had been invited to the suite. The King of Spain was there, sort of Sepp Blatter, blah, blah, blah. And afterwards, a South African politician arrived, and I asked my wife, who was that? Or who is that? And she said, with a hell of a lot of confidence, that's Gwede Mantashe. So eventually he came over, and bold as hell, I said, how are you, Mr. Mantashe? And I just saw his eyebrows just raise a little bit and go down again, and we carried on talking, and he quickly made his getaway, and my wife started laughing, and I swear to you, it was one of the few times that I would have actually thrown her over the balcony or thrown myself, more like it, because I knew that it wasn't him. And it actually turned out to be Bladen Zimande.
Oh.
And those are the scenarios where I actually lie awake at night, Bonnie, just thinking about it, and it's a horrible feeling.
You can always make up again, you know, when you meet
you
again.
Can't.
Sorry.
No, you can never take that back.
I know. Oi, that's a sad one, but don't worry about it. It happens to everybody, you know. Sooner or later, it'll happen to everybody. Yeah. So, Bafana, the call up, your first game. Who did you play for at that stage before you played for Bafana?
No, I was at Cape Town Spurs still, and Trot Moloto was the coach at Bafana, and he gave me my first call up.
On your phone? Did he phone you?
No.
Or was it a whole thing through the club?
You normally hear it in the press, in the newspapers, and you kind of you're playing well, and you kind of get an idea that people are watching you. Because you'll see him in the stadium, and people will let you know that, look, you know, Trot Moloto has come to check you out. So you're on a good wicket, so to speak. And shortly after that, I did get a call up, which I was very pleased about. Obviously, to play for your country is like the pinnacle of your career. Mm. So I think it was in 98 or 99, I played against Botswana and Gaborone. And that was my first time that I put on the green and gold.
What was your number 14 then, huh? What was the number when you first played?
Yeah, I think the one that I got was some arbitrary number. I don't, you know, when you're a youngster, you don't get to sort of pull your weight, you know, and you don't get to pick and choose your number. Later on, during the World Cup and Confederations Cup, it was 14. But I think at that stage, they could have given me number 5, which was like a typical defender's number. You know?
So that first game you played, did you guys win?
Yeah, we won. I think we beat them 1-0. It was very much a second string sort of Bafana team. They didn't call up the foreign-based players. But be that as it may, you know, it was still great to play and get a victory on my debut.
And how do you feel about the press and you know, the whole country behind the Bafana, and then, you know, you lose 3 or 4 in a row, and then people lose interest, and they support Kaizer Chiefs and Pirates more than they support the Bafana. It's always been like that. But how do you handle that? Don't you read the newspapers on a weekend? Don't you care about the press, or does it affect you a lot as a player?
I think, you know, when I was younger, I used to take things very personally, especially when I was on social media. You know, I used to always worry about people's perceptions of me. But I think the older you get, the thicker your skin, and now I very rarely read sports reports or analysts. I think my view is that should a Lucas Kadebe or a Neil Tovey or John Mushweo come up to me and say, hey, look, this is what I think you should have done, or I would take that, you know, and cherish it, you know, as constructive criticism. But if some guy who's never kicked a ball in anger before writing for so-and-so or whoever writes an analysis, critical analysis about me, it's really, you know, it doesn't have much impact on me.
The bad publicity you had, what? I don't think you've ever had bad publicity, have you?
No, not in my private life as far as I can tell. But from a football perspective, you know, leading up to the World Cup, you know, the stakes were high.
Mm.
I think there were a lot of shenanigans behind the scenes, and you know, whether or not journalists were part of that or not, you'll never know. But you can assume that there was. You know, obviously people have their favorites, so people were definitely pushing agendas. But it was something that I never really took notice of.
Mm.
I think my wife, if anybody took a great offense to one or two journalists, and they received some letters from her, she's always been very protective, and which has been great for me. So it was like water off a duck's back to me. But it was just interesting, you know, leading up to the greatest sporting event in the world right here on our doorstep, how the stakes were suddenly elevated, you know.
Mm. And you sat on the bench, what, three? You didn't even, did you touch a ball?
No.
You know, I'm sitting here right now and I have to bring it up because I don't know how I would have handled something like that. There you are. You can't, and you're sitting there as a substitute. If they brought you on, you would have won all the games. But the coach made a mistake.
You're just being polite.
How do you feel today, you know, not touching a ball while... Shabalala, hey, we scored that the first goal in the World Cup. How did you feel sitting on the bench? You were on the bench, right?
Yes.
And you saw that goal. I mean, but once again, you are a sub, but you are a team. The team comes first, right? Doesn't matter in which position or...
I could have been on the field with him. Mm. I would have had the same reaction, you know, as I did on the bench. It was just pure ecstasy. I don't think anybody could understand the whole build-up. I mean, that build-up took place for us as players 6 months beforehand. We were in Brazil for a month. We were in Germany for a month, camping. In South Africa, again, for a month and a half, camping. We were just eating, sleeping, living football, preparing for this tournament. The nerves involved as well, not knowing whether you're going to make the final squad, also took a big toll. So that all culminated in that particular goal. And it just, the outpouring of emotion, I mean, the warm-up to that game, we had some real tough guys in that team, you know, who were shedding a tear in that warm-up leading up to the game, just soaking in the atmosphere. And that was in itself quite incredible, you know. And the goal was just an explosion, you know, outpouring of emotion, like I said. But it was tough. It's something that I'm going to regret until my dying days that I never was able to play.
But also the important role you played. I mean, the build-up, as you say, on the bus driving there, during the practice sessions. I mean, anybody could have got hurt, you were there. Mm. And it wasn't your time, you know, it was one of those things. But if it wasn't for, I mean, all the subs sitting there, how many of you never got a game? I mean, a couple of...
Yeah, there were a good couple of us. I think there were 22, 23 in the squad. And yeah, a good couple of us never got a touch. So I wasn't alone. There were some players who got taken out of the squad completely, you know, a couple of weeks before the tournament. Mm. So, you know, established players like Benny McCarthy never made it. So, yeah, it was tough after all that preparation. But to be honest with you, I could see it coming 6 months before when Pereira came. Santana, under Santana, I played virtually all the games. And played well. But as soon as Pereira came back for his second stint, I realized that I could be in trouble here because he hadn't called me up when he was here for his first stint. So that's the way the cookie crumbles, you know. It's coaches have their opinions. And I tried my best to change his mind, but it wasn't to be.
Where did we go wrong during the World Cup? Where do you think, if you had to play... on that field, what would you have changed as a coach?
Well, I think we should have had a bit more spine when we went 1-0 up against Mexico. We should have a bit more spine and kind of he should have strengthened perhaps the midfield that was covering our back four. just to maintain that 1-0 lead. And I think everybody knows in a tournament of that magnitude that you've got to get off to a good start, you know. And then, of course, we met the Uruguayans, who were at that stage different class. And, you know, the red card of Cooney, I don't think would have changed much. The Uruguayans were just too good for us. And we were pretty poor on the day defensively. And I felt we could have dealt with Suarez and Forlán a bit better. But yeah, it's all very well to have said that sitting on the bench. Mm.
But also sitting on the bench, I mean, I watch rugby quite often as well. And the passion, that bench, you know, when you score, or, you know, just to carry you, you can hear it to the bench that will go up and shake your hand and come on, guys, do it. So I think you play an important role as well. And when you get your chance, I mean, you played 37 caps, and there were other guys on the bench. And how did you feel about them being there? Do they play an important role?
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, there's no time for sour grapes. You know, ultimately, you don't want to suffer from a pull me down syndrome. You know, there's no time for jealousy or for whatever. You know, you've got to give that support, and ultimately, you've got to put yourself in the right frame of mind, because at any stage you could end up getting thrown on. Mm. You know, so it's very difficult for a footballer to switch mentality or psychologically. You know, you've got to get into the right frame of mind, and that's by doing that you've got to be encouraging, especially for some of the young players who were going on to this amazing stage. You had to show a strength, and being one of the senior players, that was up to me.
The motivation before you had to run out there, and the build-up, did you have a lot of people, did you have psychiatrists, psychologists, doctors, nurses? Sorry, I'm just, because, I mean, we don't know what happens. I mean, just to get your mind right and whatever. A coach can't do that, right? On the field, the coach can help you. But mentally, do you still remember the people that helped you guys?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, the World Cup on your doorstep in your lifetime, you don't need psychologists or even a coach, you know, to motivate you. You're already motivated. I think they did get us a guy called Robin Banks, who I'm sure a lot of people will know. He came and did a few sessions with us, and he was, you know, Robin Banks. I mean, he's well known in the industry. He had a difficult task in kind of keeping a balance between us not getting too hyped up and, you know, getting too blasé about the whole event, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, football has never been historically too much into dietitians and psychologists and that. I think there is an aspect there for them to play. But I think as an industry, we've still got to catch up in that regard. But like I said, I mean, we were getting off that bus before the Mexico game. We were singing and dancing, and we were just going, you know, getting nice and warm in the change room, and the atmosphere was unbelievable. And running out onto that field in front of 90,000 people, World Cup opening game, I mean, you can't, it's just the words. I can't describe the feeling.
And you're standing there and singing the national anthem. Did you shed a tear? What did you think of while that anthem was playing? What flashed through all the hard work you've done, maybe your family?
The tears, I don't remember actually crying, but I definitely welled up. I mean, I think most grown men would have done the same, and a couple of the lads were in tears during the warm-up, like I said before, and it was hell of emotional. Singing your national anthem on a stage like that, you can't blame us.
In the middle of the calabash, and then, remember, all over the world, in every single house, wherever there's a TV, your face is there. It's an amazing thing. People just don't understand. But do you still speak to Moriri and all the guys you played with? Do you still socialize a lot today after, you know, since 2010? Do you still get together with the guys and socialize and chat and about the World Cup?
No, not particularly. I've lost touch with most of the guys since I've retired. Most of the guys who played in that World Cup, I've lost touch with. But I've kept in touch with guys who live in my area, and I still keep in contact. You know, I go and watch a lot of games. But socializing, not necessarily. You know, I have my own small circle of friends who are not in the football industry, and I think that's the way I like to keep it. But certainly, I'll keep in touch with a couple of close mates that I have from my early football.
Barney and Friends, Barney Simon, Jacaranda FM.